Back live on WHPC 90.3 FM. Just barely, though.
I went on vacation and I survived.
And so we do. We have death-defying experiences. I'm laughing. Not really that funny, but having been through it all. Heidi and I were away last week, and we basically were in Lake Tahoe, and it entailed, let's see, we had a terrorist incident back at Kennedy Airport on the return. We had my son driving his bike off of a cliff in front of me and rolling down the mountain. They're very scary situations, all of these things. And yet, all's well that ends well. Nice to be back in a nice, safe studio, though. I could do this every Wednesday and Friday and just stay home and basically enjoy my own house and talk about music on the radio.
I'm putting in a padded cell for you.
Really? That's what I really need, a padded cell. Let me out to basically walk around the yard and use the pool for half an hour. I'll be fine. Well, a few weeks back, we just recently reached the year 1967 in our coverage of what we are calling the most influential albums of the top 40. We started in 1964, working our way through these albums chronologically. We have 500 that we want to cover. And just a couple albums back, we hit 1967, which is the year that things really start to change rapidly. I will admit that when we were playing these top 40 albums from 1964 to 1966, you might have thought that we were being a little bit too limited in our choices, or maybe it sounded too redundant hearing the Beatles maybe 10 times, maybe even more. The Rolling Stones, something like 6 or 7 times. The Beach Boys, 4 or 5 times. Bob Dylan, maybe 5 or 6 times. There was just this loop of the most of these artists, because there's only very few rock and roll artists that made albums that seemed to be particularly relevant from 64 to 66. Well, this is the year. 1967 was a banner year for a number of reasons. Most of the time, I guess we think of it as the year that it gave us the Summer of Love. Granted, of course, that's a big deal. It's also thought of by many as the year that psychedelic music rose to prominence. Also, absolutely true. But those things were fleeting, in a sense. They came and they went. So those things, music from this era, it's things like that that might actually date it if it's too associated with the Summer of Love. Like that Mamas and Papas song that we just heard that was played, that beautiful song. It just sounds like that era.
Right.
You know? But maybe the most important thing about 1967 was that rock and roll music began to make a significant shift, a swift and significant shift, away from the teen-based pop formula, the 45 RPM single that had more or less sustained it up until this point, and began to move to something that was significantly more mature. Hit records became less important, while it was albums that began to make statements, and they became all the rage. All of a sudden, maybe the fact is that the 12 and 14 or the 12 to 15-year-olds who are buying the singles are now the 15 to 20-year-olds who have got a job and they can afford albums. So all of a sudden, albums matter. And especially now that, you know, there was this influence from the Summer of Love and psychedelic music, albums were making statements that really seemed to basically affect a significant change on the state of music and what you could do with pop music. All these things happened in 1967. This is like the musical history of how things changed. But, you know, this thing about going from singles to albums might be the most significant change of all, because that change has lasted right up until the present day. Now, The Doors, their debut album, appeared in January of 1967, right at the beginning of it. We covered two other albums that appeared that same month. More of the Monkees was a couple of weeks back. And last week we covered Between the Buttons by the Rolling Stones, also January 1967. This album, more than those, this Doors album, pretty much represents the exact point at where that shift takes place. The band, The Doors, straddled that fence of, you know, between pop 45 and album rock by releasing the single Light My Fire, a heavily edited version of it, as a pop single that became a huge hit. And because the album was a huge hit and the band was brand new and people wanted to know more about the band, it drove people to want to buy the album. So sales of the album skyrocketed the back of the hit single. And then they'd suddenly hear, instead of a 2.5-minute version of the song, a 7-minute version.
That's pretty wild.
Right. So the people who took the risk to buy the album heard something that was really radical for its time. An album that had numerous tracks, most of which, or many of which at least, were probably even better songs than the single.
Cool.
Including a 10-minute opus that challenged everybody's idea of what pop music could be. This wasn't a band running through blues changes for 10 minutes. We've seen that a couple of times. Or bands that would, you know, basically extend the instrumental section to go on for a while.
Right.
This was something very different from that.
Unique.
From this point on, rock music really never looked back. Everything before 1967 was rendered obsolete, while everything that came after it harkened back to the innovations of this incredibly influential year. And perhaps more than any other act, the Doors stood at that crossroads of the times by pointing all of us in this radically new direction with their debut album. Now, we talked about the single, but the lead-off track, the band name Doors, was in itself a reference to psychedelia. It was taken from the Doors of Perception,
right,
an Aldous Huxley thing about opening up your mind to new experiences, breaking down barriers so that you could basically get past things that would have blocked you before. Very 13th floor elevators.
I was going to say, yes.
In terms of what the Doors were doing. Now, the 13th floor elevators were way ahead of that. And when we were covering alternative albums that didn't make the top 40, we covered that already. We're getting near the point now where we're going to be able to go back and forth between
right.
pop albums and
finally getting caught up to ourselves.
Right, and the alternative albums. So in maybe a few more shows we'll be doing both at the same time, you know, alternating from week to week. But here is where it finally basically hit the pop charts. This album reached number 2. And people just figured maybe The Doors was just like, oh, a dumb name for a band, The Doors. Oh, why not The Windows? Why not, you know, The Doorknobs? It meant something. Like I said, this Doors of Perception thing was all about mind expansion. And the lead-off track was the first clue you could possibly get. The song is called Break On Through to the Other Side. In other words, kick down the doors that are holding you in.
That's right.
And here it is.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side, break on through to the other side, yeah. We chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. But can't you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the
amazing lead-off track. And if you're thinking about everything that we've covered up until this point, you could just tell this is something different. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
I guess we all take the Doors for granted now, but I guess what I'm trying to do here is basically make you feel exactly how significantly wild this was for the time in which it was released. There's just, I mean, not just mostly Jim Morrison, his incredible presence and that the way that he would sing, like in a very sexy way, really, quite frankly, in a way that basically would captivate anybody. And it suddenly gave this really incredible injection of testosterone into rock and roll. There was something about that that was like, you know, it was like, it went beyond even what the Stones were doing. It's way beyond what the Beatles were doing, and of course, forget the Beach Boys. this was more or less like, it sounded like sex personified in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah.
And in the meantime, you've got like, you know, band players are excellent. The drummer, John Densmore, is doing really cool. He starts with like a bossa nova beat, because that's what was happening actually on the singles charts in other areas of music. And he, being a percussionist, that's a cool new rhythm. So it's interesting. Now he incorporates bossa nova into rock and roll to the point where you don't even recognize it as bossa nova anymore.
Right.
You know, that's cool enough. And then you got Robbie Krieger, who at this point, when he started playing with the band, he only had 6 months of experience playing the guitar.
Wow.
He just worked and worked and worked. And the band played live a lot. And through all the appearances, he began to get better and better. And he took the riff for that song straight from the Paul Butterfield blues band version of the song Shake Your Moneymaker.
Very cool.
You might think, but we covered that album too.
Right.
About maybe 6 months ago, again, when we were covering the alternative albums. And that's another reason why that album was picked. I didn't mention it at the time, but the thing is, a lot of people were listening to that record.
Yep.
Not just the way that
influential.
Yeah. It basically brought blues to the masses. And then it also meant that people like the Doors were listening and copying bits from it to put it out. So that's the way that the album broke out, and it spoke volumes already. There's hardly a song on the album that doesn't, though. This next track, called Soul Kitchen, is another pretty awesome song from the record, a song that was eventually covered by the band X. So there's a punk version of this. That was when the band's keyboard player, Ray Manzarek, actually was the producer for X. So that, you know, with him producing it, X played his own song for him, in a sense, at that point. Here's the original version, though, of Soul Kitchen.
Says it's time to close now. I guess I better go now. I really like to stay here all night. The cars crawl past, all stuffed with ice. There a hollow glow. Your brain seems bruised with numb surprise. Still one place to go. Still one place to go. Let me sleep all night in your soul kitchen. What a man. Sleep all night in your soul kitchen. Warm my mind in your gentle stone. Turn me out in a wonder, baby. Stumbling in the neon glow. Hey! clock says it's time to close now. I know I have to go now. I really want to stay here all night. All night. All night.
Soul Kitchen by The Doors. What a significant change this was. Assuming things, actually, Mike Rosenblum, a friend of the show, who's actually been a guest of ours here at the station, just called basically talking about his own love for the album and about Break On Through to the Other Side, maybe being one of the single best album opening tracks of all time. Certainly by 1967, it was a statement to make. But I'm pointing out here that the album was released in January 1967, but the single, Light My Fire, was a hit during the summer of 1967. And up until that point, the album wasn't really selling particularly well. It just didn't really get heard. The there was another single that was released, I think it was Break On Through, was the first single released from the album, and it flopped. So the album just sort of sat around. It didn't really go anywhere. It wasn't until the edited version of Light My Fire got released and began to climb up the pop charts and get airplay that it then propelled the album. So the album, the album was out for maybe 6 months when it suddenly started to climb the charts rapidly. And in the middle of the Summer of Love, The Doors were maybe I guess you could say they were maybe the single biggest band out of the United States at that point in time, which is also kind of funny because if you think about the Summer of Love, the mood that you're thinking about is not the mood that is projected by The Doors.
Right.
The Doors basically alters that somehow, makes it a little bit, because The Doors are more, moody to say the least, darker. It's not all purple flowers and sunshine on a Doors album. Well, let's keep going. The next track was the song that was the B-side, as I recall, of Light My Fire, a song called The Crystal Ship.
Before you slip into unconsciousness, I'd like to have another kiss, another flashing chance at bliss, another kiss, another kiss. The days are bright and filled with pain. Enclose me in your gentle rain. The time you ran was too insane. We'll meet again. We'll meet again. Streets are fields that never die. Deliver me from reasons why you'd rather cry. I'd rather fly. The crystal ship is being filled. Thousand
Crystal Ship. Forgot that the back in those days, the singles were short, including the B-sides. You're listening to American Hit Radio, by the way, on WHPC 90.3 FM. I'm Tom Ryan, Heidi Morales, Ryan with me as well. We've been, for maybe about a couple of years now, counting our way through some of the greatest full albums ever released. We are doing a series of 500 that never made the top 40, paralleling that with another series of 500 albums that did make the top 40. This is the latter list, those that did. And as I said, this album eventually rose to number two in the summer of 1967. And to this day, it stands out as one of the most classic rock. There's really not anybody's list of the greatest albums in rock and roll. It would be remiss if the list was anywhere, you know, less than 50 albums or more. This album has to be on it. This album should be in anybody's top 20, I would think, really. And it's mostly because of the consistency of the releases. I mean, every song up to this point already stands for something, still has relevance all this time later. What is it, 50 years?
Incredible.
Really? You know, 49 years later? Next track, another great play on word. There was the movie thing, the company 20th Century Fox. Jim Morrison turns it into a song about, you know, sex and a hot girl. She's a 20th Century Fox.
Well, she's fashionably lean, and she's fashionably late. She'll never wreck a scene, she'll never break a day. But she's no drag, just watch the way she walks. She's a 20th Century Fox. She's a 20th Century Fox. No tears, no fears, no ruin years, no clocks. She's a 20th Century Fox. Oh, yeah, yeah. The queen of cool, and she's the lady who waits since her mind left school. It never hesitates. She won't waste time on elementary talk, 'cause she's a 20th Century Fox. She's a 20th Century Fox. Got the world locked up inside a plastic box. She's a 20th Century Fox, oh yeah. 20th Century Fox, oh yeah. 20th Century Fox, oh yeah. She's a 20th Century.
This point in time, the Doors are sharing all of the writing credits between them. Kind of a cool thing, basically, that's going on. And the whole album is original, except for two songs, one of them being this next track, which happens to be the same. This is funny how these coincidences are happening. Like, if you remember, just about a month ago, we actually got to the point where we were covering like Simon Garfunkel in two different ways in one week, and then the Byrds came up, and that happened with the Byrds. It seemed almost like redundant. In a way, that's going to happen now because we're going to go all the way back to 1930 on Friday to cover the music of Europe, the pre-war music of Europe that became very influential here in America. the whole series of Fridays about how music changed, blah, 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 and things that affected American music. Well, these are the things that I feel, even though it wasn't American music, that became very, very important to American music. And one of those things that we're going to cover is the music of Bertolt Brecht and Kurt Weill, the German composers who wrote a number of plays, Mack the Knife, et cetera, et cetera. Well, one of the things that they had written happens to be this song that the Doors cover on their first album, a rock and roll version of them covering, like, basically a German show tune, a very dark German show tune, which we'll talk about on Friday. The song is called The Alabama Song.
Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. Oh, don't ask why. Oh, don't ask why. For if we don't find the next whiskey bar, I tell you, die. I tell you we must die. I tell you, I tell you, I tell you we must die. Oh, moon of Alabama, now must say goodbye. We've lost our good old
brings us to the hit single, although it's not exactly the hit single. Like, as I said, the album version has got an organ solo that is longer than the single.
That's nice.
Quite literally. I remember when I first heard it, I'm like, oh, that's meandering. I'd say for about...
You mean like the very first time ever?
The very first time I ever heard the album version. But I have to admit, even to this day, I think I like it when it's truncated. I think I like the 45 version better, because I like when songs...
It gets a little too jam-banny.
Yeah, right, right. I like songs that kind of get to the point, and this one does meander a bit. But it was a huge hit. Here's Light My Fire.
You know that it would be untrue. You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't
get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. Thank you. time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
It almost smells like 1967 when I hear that song.
What are you trying to say, Tom?
And that's just side one. That was just side one. With the time that's left, I don't want to waste too much time because we got a lot to play. So let's play the other song that was a cover song on the album. This was a song originally made famous by Howlin' Wolf. It's called Backdoor Man.
I'm
was a lot of bands playing the blues up until this point in time. A lot of them were English. But I'd say that that version there of Backdoor Man is one of the most credible blues covers I'd ever heard. It really does update it. I mean, nobody's a bigger Howlin' Wolf fan than me. Willie Dixon wrote that song with such a vengeance, and it's so great to hear Howlin' Wolf sing it. It's amazing. But Jim Morrison does this amazingly cool thing. He turns it into like a youthful, sexy song about going around to basically cheating around the back door and, and whatnot. It gives it this incredible power, and it just basically suddenly makes it makes the point that the blues are very much a part of rock and roll, not just as something that you can emulate, but as something that you can literally embody. Did a great job of it on that. We got a lot more to cover, so I'm going to play the three middle songs on side B all back to back, just so we can get to the end, literally. The first track up is called I Looked at You, and we'll go from there.
Summer born to the end.
Looked at You, End of the Night, and then Take It As It Comes, three original songs in the middle section of side two of the album, which brings us to the last track, The End, with a song called The End, a song that very well might stand as really the first like big, monstrous rock and roll statement of its kind ever. It's got all sorts of weird, dark things going on there. There's Freudian imagery, all... It just goes on and on. Of course, it used to great effect in any number of movies. But Morrison himself was basically, when he was asked about it, what do you mean by my only friend, the end? And his comment was, sometimes the pain is just too much to examine or even tolerate. That doesn't make it evil, though, or even necessarily dangerous. People fear death even more than pain. It's strange that they fear death. Life hurts a lot more than death. At the point of death, the pain is over. Yeah. I guess it is a friend. That perspective. Here is The End. Enjoy it, folks, and we'll be back on Friday with a new series on how music changed. Good to be back.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend. The end of our elaborate plans. The end of everything that stands. The end. No safety or surprise, the end. I'll never look into your eyes again. Can you picture what will be so limitless and free? Just of some stranger's hand in a desperate land. lost in a romance, wilderness of pain, and all the children are insane. All our children are insane, waiting for the summer rain. There's danger on the edge of town. Ride the king's highway, baby. Weird scenes inside the gold mine. Ride the highway west, baby. Ride the snake. Ride the snake to the lake, the ancient lake, baby. The snake is long, 7 miles. Ride the snake. He's old and his skin is cold. The West is the best. Is the best. Get here and we'll do the rest. The blue bus is calling us. The blue bus the killer awoke before dawn. He put his boots on. He took a face from the ancient gallery and he walked on down the hall. He went into the room where his sister lived and then he paid a visit to his brother and then he walked on down the hall and he came to a door and he looked inside. Father, yes, son, I want to kill you. Mother, I want to. Come on.
Come on, baby, take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us. Come on, baby, take a chance with us and meet me at the back of the blue bus. Do not blue rock on the blue bus. Do not. Yeah. Come on,
this is